I'm Gab, he's Jules. Dark skies and clouds over West London. Probably appropriate given what's happening at Chelsea. We're going to get into that with Romelu Lukaku's move to Inter. Plenty more to get into. By the way, Jules, this is our last show before summer hiatus. I know, we're going to make it a special one already with the shirt. You can already see how special it is.
Yeah.
Let's start at the top. Romelu Lukaku has agreed a deal to move back to Inter. It's a loan deal. It's a one-year loan deal. The numbers out there, it's right around 8 million euros plus up to 2 million euros in performance-related bonuses. As I've mentioned before, and I think people haven't made as much of a deal out of it as they should, he is taking a 30% pay cut.
That's right.
On top of that, because he's moving before June 30th, Inter can take advantage of this special, complicated and boring tax deal that I'm not going to get into. Yeah. But basically, he's going to cost Inter, I think, slightly less than what he cost them when he was there the first time around. This is a player who Chelsea bought for 113 million euros a year ago.
Yeah.
The loan fee is not even going to cover the amortization. I mean, the wages off the books for a year. From an accounting standpoint, team building standpoint, this is a disaster, yeah?
It is a disaster. It's a shame because I think he had everything to not be a disaster, to be good. Him coming back, and a team that was European champions with a lot of momentum, with really good squad, a really good coach in the Premier League where he still had things to prove, I think. It was all perfect. And I think a lot of us almost fell for it. And in the end, it was a disaster. It's not completely his fault. He still finished as the top scorer for Chelsea last season with 15 goals in all competition, which is not enough and not many, maybe, for a player of his caliber. There was a lot of things that happened through the season, but you have to say this deal, and usually we always have to see a deal like that for the three parties. For him, this is what he wanted. He wanted to go back. This is a place where he's been obviously very successful before. So this is a good deal for him. Even if he had to take a pay cut, it's still a very good deal. He's still going to earn a lot of money anyway. For Inter, it's an incredible deal, considering how much money they made of selling him and what a bargain that they have now. It's for Chelsea, it's a terrible deal, but a deal that they had to make because there was no point for them keeping him anyway.
Okay, this is one of the things that I want to understand, and if I'm Todd Bowley, I want to understand, right? I've just arrived, Marina has left, and we'll be talking about that later, as has Bruce Buck. I asked myself, wait a minute, Thomas, you were here last summer. Who thought this was a good idea? I know that Inter desperately needed to sell to balance the books. Who at this club thought this was a good idea? Who assessed the chances that Lukaku would be coming here and then, you know, maybe would be unhappy and give that interview to Sky or whatever? Who assessed Lukaku's fitness? Because, you know, you could never know 100%, but, you know, clubs go and they evaluate that when they make an offer. And then did we put Lukaku in the best possible conditions to succeed? And it's not just about blame. You know, people now are putting out this narrative, ooh, there's pressure on Thomas Tuchel after he agreed this. Thomas Tuchel doesn't buy players on his own. He doesn't set the budget on his own.
No.
But if I'm Bowley, I want to understand this because I need to know, I need to hold people accountable so that these mistakes don't happen again in the future.
Exactly. Not for Lukaku, not to look into the past, but you're right, for that. For that thing, that kind of transfer not happening again, you need to understand where the mistake or where the mistakes were made or was made, who is responsible. But again, it can happen. So many clubs bought the wrong players.
But this is a spectacular failure, though. This is an
incredible disaster.
You know, you can't do it with 100 million player. You simply cannot afford to have a screw up of this magnitude.
Because you can sign a 100 million player, like we said, with Coutinho, with Dembele, over the length of their contract or half of it doesn't work out. But on such a short term period, such a big investment to crash like that is never seen before, I think.
From Inter's perspective, we're seeing the Lukaku Lautaro partnership, the Lula, back together
again,
with some Champions League action as well. Yeah. They're moving for some younger players, obviously Bellanova, Alessani. Have they just made a substantial step forward? And will that be undermined if, as many people have suggested, they're going to have to sacrifice one of their big hitters, whether Bastoni or Barella or whatever?
Yeah, or Skriniar. I think there's one big deal that we'll have to be done for them. Let go. If it's Skriniar, I think it's maybe less damaging than if it's Barella
100%,
or Bastoni.
100%, yeah.
And I think this is the way it will go. And in PSG, they find the perfect client in a way. But it's compared to last season, even if you lose Skriniar, but you gain Lukaku and Aslani and Belanova and the others, you lost Perisic as well. But Di Marco can do a job. You might have other options.
Well, and you have Robin Gosens.
And you have Gosens, who at some point would be fully fit and hopefully at the level that he was at Atalanta. You're a better team. But Gab, do you think he really wanted to come back? In the sense that he was really happy clearly in Milan and Inter, and they were having something very good there. I know when he joined Chelsea, he said all the right things, but he was always going to do, like, you know, this is the club I supported when I was a kid because of Drogba, because of this, I've got a point to prove, all of that, okay, I get it. But do you think that he really, because maybe that's also part of the problem, maybe he came back but didn't really come back and didn't really want to be there in the first place, which is suddenly a feeling. I love Rom so much. I interviewed him after the Arsenal game when he scored that first goal. It was his debut. He was, everything looked so great. And I have a lot of time for him. But at times this season, I saw him and I saw his body language, and from what the dressing room was saying, it felt like maybe part of the problem was that he never really actually wanted to be there.
I think this is one of those mysteries, and I'll walk you through the mystery. But before that, I need to make a point. Whether he wants to be there or not, he's a professional footballer. He has a World Cup coming up in 18 months when he moved, or he didn't. This isn't an excuse. This isn't. We've all had jobs. We've all had to do things we don't like.
I know.
You know, was he like doing cartwheels when he was sent on loan to West Brom or whatever? Probably not. So I think that is definitely very, very secondary. But I think you make a great point, because this is a big part of the narrative. You can't have it both ways. So the official story that Lukaku's people would put out is, Inter had to sell me. I left for the good of Inter because they desperately needed that money to balance the books and so on. So that would align with what you said. You know, he didn't really want to come back, but Inter had to sell him. But then you have the line from the ultras, and he had such a tight relationship with Inter's ultras. I mean, really tight.
Yeah.
And the ultras say, well, hang on a minute. You're a professional footballer. You have a contract. You know, you're not a piece of property. You can say no. You can say, I'm going to stay. You can say, sell somebody else. The ultras actually said, like, sell Lautaro, sell Barella. You know, we love Lukaku. I mean, not sell Barella, but you know, we love Lukaku so much. Like, why is he the guy you have to sell? You know, you can't. And I think there is some truth in that, right? It's a fine line you're walking. You either come out and say, I really want to stay, but for the good of the club, they asked me to go, and I'm leaving. Maybe you can kind of thread the needle that way.
Yeah.
You know, and then you add, oh, but I'm lucky because I'm going back to Chelsea where I was before, blah, 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 and I love London and yada, yada, yada. But it's a very, very, and I think he told the ultras, and again, when we talk about the ultras, we're talking about a large group of people, some of whom I don't think are necessarily that level-headed.
Yeah.
You know, he said, I didn't want to go. I don't want to go. I'm not going. I'm staying with you. This is my home now.
Yeah.
And it is his home. I mean, he's kept his house and everything. So I think it's a really difficult one. I don't think we know. Certainly from the ultras perspective, they put out, and I think there's an argument to be made we pay too much attention to this, but they put out a statement where they said, look, we're not going to boo Lukaku, but we're not going to support him either. Nobody's going to wear any kind of Lukaku shirt or Lukaku t-shirt.
Yeah.
He starts from zero.
He's not the king anymore. Yeah.
He's not the king anymore. Yeah. He starts from zero. And he's going to have to rebuild this relationship from zero. He's going to have to prove himself. You know, which I think is also, guys, let's live in the real world. You know, these guys are professionals. You know the situation at Inter. You know, should he not have said that I'm definitely staying? I don't know. But what I think is interesting is, and people have suggested this, about what happens if he has a good season.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, let's go through the different scenarios, right? He has a good season, scores 25, 30 goals, and he says, I want to stay at Inter. And Chelsea say, okay, now what?
Can you loan him again?
Of course. Chelsea could loan him again, but Chelsea are going to be in a situation where they have zero leverage.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he wants to be there. He says he wants to be there. If you're Chelsea, you know, you can fix a price if you like. And maybe it'll be different if Lukaku leaves. Maybe Tuchel's gone. Maybe Roberto Martinez comes in after winning the World Cup. Maybe all of that changes. But otherwise, Chelsea have very little leverage. Because if that's where he is, he's got the contract, it's where he wants to be. If Inter says, oh, sorry, I'm only going to pay you $5 million.
Yeah, there's no way Inter could pay, even in a year time, up to 70 or 80 million. No. They won't be in that position unless they sold.
No, I think it's impossible. But Inter would. I mean, it would be so stupid for Inter because he's going to be in his 30s at that point.
Yeah.
Right? So, Inter could eventually get him at a knockdown price. But, you know, I bring up the boring argument of amortization, right? He's costing them $22 million. So in 2 years' time, the amortization is going to be $66 million is that right? Around $66, $68 million from Chelsea's perspective. But again, if you're Inter, I don't have to take him and his massive contract with another 3 years left.
That's true.
You know,
that's
they
true.
Might be like, I'll give you $20 million, you know? So it's a really horrendous position that Chelsea are in financially from that perspective. And okay, the good news is they're saving themselves his wages for this season. And
yeah, you know, which is a lot.
It is a lot. It's well over £300,000 a week.
But they would have to pay another striker. They're going to sign another striker, right? They can't go on like this.
That, to me, is an interesting question. I think they have two options. So the question is, do you continue with Havertz as your center forward and sign a backup? You know, a big body. And you've got one in Armando Broja, who, as you know, I really, really like.
Yeah, me too.
And he can kind of be the Tammy Abraham of the situation, you know, in terms of role, not necessarily characteristics. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you go back in the market and you spend serious money, hang on a minute, this club has other priorities. This club is still two central defenders down, possibly three central defenders down, if Azpilicueta doesn't extend.
Yeah.
On top of that, I go back to this, I think you have a problem in midfield because Conte gets injured all the time. I mean, all the time.
Right, 50% of the season.
Yeah. And Jorginho's now 31 or whatever. You know, he's not getting any younger.
No.
Saul is gone. Not that he made much of a difference. You know, do you go and tell Tuchel, oh, yeah, make it work with Billy Gilmore? You know, they've been trying all summer long to sell Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah.
To tell him make it work with Loftus-Cheek or Ross Barkley. I don't think these are terrible players.
No,
and
no,
I think
no.
I would go to Tuchel and say, Tommy, we can't have everything, right? You want to do this deal with a striker? Fine. But then, are you prepared? These aren't bad players. Can you make them into good players?
Yeah, no, of course. Of course.
It's just a ton of pressure on them. And on top of that, what are we hearing? They're constantly linked with wingers. Sterling, Dembele, this whole conversation with people who think Dembele is exactly what they need because they need winger. Maybe they do, but then maybe you change the system.
Yeah, I think he will do.
You think he's going to go 4-2-3-1?
Yeah. Or 4-3-3. But it will depend on who they can attract, of course, and the kind of players they can. I don't think they can sign three centre-backs, Gab. This transfer window, it's not possible. Not the ones they want, not with the money they have. They will have to spend €400 million, which they're not going to. Even if they have 150, if they spend 150, this is, I think, the maximum. So what do you do? You know, you will have to do over two transfer windows to be able to sign three centre-backs of the kind of level that is good enough for Chelsea. Because I'm not saying like you and I can play centre-backs. You know, we're talking Koundé and that kind of level. Players are €50-60 million. You can't sign three. It's impossible. So you've got Chalobah and you've got Thiago and I guess Reece James can play there and that's it.
You're Malang Sarr.
And Malang Sarr. But as much as I love Malang, I'm not sure if Tuchel thinks he's...
And if you move Reece James to centre-back, then you have a hole at right-back.
Exactly.
Unless they sign that dude, Santa Claus or whatever.
Santa Claus, yeah. Which, again, you know...
Who's 29 years old.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly. As much as I love him, he's not one for the future, and I don't think he starts to win you the Champions League and the Premier League either. So it's tricky. So you'll have to make decisions, and maybe the best would be good 2-back-4. You probably just need one centre-back then. And that's it. That's enough for that. And then you can think about midfield, and you can think about, I don't know, Lewandowski if you want up front, and try to get someone who's not actually too expensive in a way.
Lewandowski, that is a lot of money to commit when you, in a year's time, you've got, because the other possibility is that Lukaku gets injured, he has a bad season, Inter say thanks but no thanks, and then the dude and his wages come back next season.
No one else wants him. Because that's the thing, if he has a good season with Inter, you might have a Bayern Munich saying, okay, Lewandowski now is leaving on a free for sure. They've kept him. Hey, why don't we go for him or PSG? I don't know. Someone, if he has another really good season with Inter, maybe someone else will say, okay, we pay you the 50 million or 45 or whatever, and then we take him on. But if he has a terrible season,
at that
that's
point,
gone.
Even then, he's got to agree to it. This is the thing that people don't understand, right? We talk about sell this guy, buy this. these are human beings. They get to decide where they go. So if there's a situation where, you know, somebody in the Gulf or somebody with a lot of money but that maybe isn't super attractive, Lukaku says, all right, well, I either try to force my way to stay at Inter or I go back to Chelsea and hang out and force my way into the side, wait for Tuchel to get sacked. I don't want to go to Al Sadd or Al Garrafa or whatever. You know, like, so it really ties your hands. On top of that, we've had confirmation that Marina Granovskaya and Bruce Buck are going. I think this leaves a massive hole. There's even, you know, people have joked that Todd Boehly is the interim sports director. I mean,
I hope not.
Well, certainly the way they worked, I mean, obviously Peter Cech is the director of football, but on the money side, Marina was the negotiator. And I mean, she's had a remarkable impact on the club, right? Especially for somebody who never, ever speaks in public. She managed to come very close to balancing the books. She struck most of these deals, most of them favorable deals. Again, the Lukaku one, maybe not so much. But that's why, from the outside, I need to know who's responsible here. And I think Todd Boehly, more importantly than me, Todd Boehly needs to find out. You need to find out, and you need to figure this out. But
and Marina made the deals happen the place she was told. She was not saying, oh, I like him, let's go and sign him, you know, to be
but,
clear.
But obviously she had control of the budget, and she was a great negotiator, which is why they generally, especially selling players, they generally got very good deals. She didn't need to be replaced. There's inevitably Michael Edwards has been linked. There's a story in the Times.
Very different profile. Again, that's why it was important to say what Marina was doing compared to Michael Edwards.
Michael Edwards, for those who don't know, Michael Edwards was at Liverpool for 10 years. He's widely credited for kind of putting all of this together, for negotiating generally very good deals. I was trying to think back. What bad signings has Michael Edwards made, or have Liverpool made during Michael Edwards' tenure?
People like Karius, you know, you can argue Minamino, those kind of guys, even Origi maybe, but they're not expensive deals, that's for sure, compared to
other What about players. The other Ben Davies? Ozan Kabak? Yeah.
That was a loan, no, but some...
Certainly many more hits than misses, right? It's interesting, I think it was his farewell letter, he said, oh, you know, I only want a career for 10 years and was going to switch careers. He certainly gave the impression that his next job was not going to be
in football.
Like in football, or maybe not, certainly not in that kind of role. Equally, if you're Boehly, you'd be stupid not to talk to him 100%. And see like if you can get something done, right?
100%. Every club, I said to PSG, go and speak to him, which I think they might have tried. It was just not, I don't think that's what he wanted, but he might want Chelsea. Is it a bit weird to go from Liverpool to Chelsea though?
It is a bit weird, and is it really a different challenge? Is it if this is really what the guy wants? I don't know. Maybe he's like,
there's a rebuilding job to do, which he likes, clearly.
There is a rebuilding job to do, and you do have opportunities. Equally, though, I don't know. It could also be one of those cases where, you know, we see this when people retire. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go do something totally different. And then after 2 months, they're completely bored, going out of their minds. Like, I need to get back into football. You know, get on the phone. Hey, Julian Ward, how about you wait a little while longer? Let me come back, you know. But, I mean, is it fair to say that you should be concerned about Chelsea's summer transfers? Because you've got, well, first of all, Todd Boehly's not going to get a summer off.
No.
And secondly, you are hamstrung, and I think there's going to be financial fair play implications, definitely. At some point, this is coming back, whether it's the Premier League or the European ones. And you don't necessarily have the expertise there to deal with it like you did when Marina was there.
And it's such the wrong time. And again, I know every club goes through these times where you have to think about rebuilding and the next cycle and all of that. And this is very much Chelsea's time, as we said, because of the centre-backs, because of the midfield, because of Lukaku and the forwards and all of that. And this is such the wrong time with Marina leaving, with the change of ownership, with, you know, potentially financial fair play, with the catastrophe that the Lukaku deal was. So, because that will weigh heavily on you all summer, that the 100 million loss. You've just lost £100 million, basically, pretty much. It's crazy, and it's so the wrong time because you've got so much work to do and you don't really know who's in charge. I know Marina will stay until the end of the transfer window, but it's not the same. I'm sure she would be committed, and she's obviously really hardworking and everything. But it's not the same. This is a terrible timing. Is so bad in here, and I think losing her as well, you lose so much of a networking super talent, because, you know, yes, she was about the business side of it and balancing the books and the money, and she was great at it, but everybody knew her. Everybody everywhere knew her. Everybody had to deal with her at some point. Everybody was always positive about her. It was crazy, you know. I think it's really rare, especially for a woman in this industry, to be so widely recognized and appreciated and respected, and you lose that. And whoever comes in, it might be a great person who, with, you know, with a great CV and pedigree, anything, but I think by losing her, you lose so much. And I don't know how you go and replace her, for sure.
No question about that. Flipping it back to the Inter angle, with Lukaku back, I mean, I think if they could shift Dzeko and his wages for a year,
yeah,
you know, there's enough guys that if they can move them to a couple smaller deals, they may get away with not selling a big piece.
Yeah.
Or at least not being in a situation where, yeah, if somebody comes along and gives you 90 million for Bastoni, of course, you know, no choice. But if somebody comes in and gives you 50 million for Bastoni, I'm hanging on to Bastoni. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to say, here, take Skriniar.
Yeah, exactly.
Skriniar, who I feel has been linked with, linked with being sold every year for like the last 3 years.
Yeah.
So I think you have to look at it from that perspective. But Simone Inzaghi has extended his deal now. Mm-hmm. Are they favorites for the title next year?
I think.
Just with Lukaku?
Yeah. I think it's. So I said earlier, they're better than last season, I think. Are they better than 2 seasons ago when Conte was there, when Eriksen was there, when Hakimi was there? I'm not sure they're at that level yet, collectively, I mean. But if it clicks again, and Inzaghi obviously had a different style of play than Conte, and I think the way they had the ball and the way they moved the ball was really, really interesting. You've lost Perisic. But I think with Lukaku, you gained a lot, and the Lukaku-Lautaro partnership is going to just be reborn like this, because I think they have that understanding. So I think they will be favorite, unless Milan are very clever in the transfer window and really strengthen when they should. I'm just not sure if you're Milan, you can win again with Giroud and Ibra up front, even if Leao is amazing, even if the collective is amazing, even if Maignan and Theo and Tomori and all of that is great. I still think you need a couple of pieces there.
You're forgetting Divock Origi.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We back, and as you know, it's the last show of the season. And Jules and I are both big NBA fans, and the NBA draft is tonight. So we're going to do a little thought experiment here, Jules.
Let's
go. We prepare this for you. We're basically going to look at, we're going to have a mock draft, or a Gab and Jules draft, let's say.
Perfect.
Of the top 10 players who were born in the year 2000. So these are players who are all 21 or 22.
Yeah.
So players who would be coming out of college into some hypothetical draft. Now, unfortunately, we're not going to match them up with teams, and it would be cool, but it's just too complicated.
Yes.
You know, draft for need. So basically, we're all people who are drafting for talent and drafting for upside.
Yes.
Okay? Only players born in 2000. Here we go. Jules, you're going to get the first pick. I'll get 2 and 3.
Thank you
get 4, 5,
much.
And so on. So, with the number one pick in the 2022 Gab and Jules draft, Julian Lawrence selects
Erling Braut Haaland.
All right, that's a real
get
shock.
Get in!
All right.
I know there's talent in that generation, but he's the most talented. So, come to me, Erling. Come to me. You and I, we're going to do great things.
All right. I'm up.
Yep.
And I'm proud to announce that with the second pick in the 2022 Gab and Jules draft, Gab picks Phil Foden.
Hey! No surprise there either.
Yeah. And since I got the third pick as well, with the third pick, I'm going to go with Vinicius Jr. It's all chalk so far,
Look,
all obvious.
I've This is what I've wrote down.
This is where it gets interesting. I think there's a clear top three, yeah? And this is where it gets interesting.
Exactly. So as my second pick, the fourth pick in the Gabon Jewel draft for this year 2022 and the 2000 generation, I pick Alfonso Davies.
Fonzie,
who, you know, I know he had a little scare with his heart, but he's all good now, and he's the future. He's amazing. And also, he's a leader. I need leaders in my dressing room for that young generation.
Interesting there. Not concerned at all, clearly, from some of his physical ailments.
No, I believe in you, Fonzie.
All right. With the fifth pick.
Yes.
Where are you going?
You know where I'm going. I'm going the best midfielder for the next 10 years in Aurélien Tchouaméni.
All right. Okay. All right. You know what? I am not rattled at all. These are not the picks.
I've got Haaland, Davies, and Tchouaméni. So basically the best in their positions.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a one-up you because with the sixth pick in the 2022 Gab and Jules draft, Gab selects Mason Mount.
Ah,
how about that?
No, thanks.
All right. Okay, it's amazing. I've 67% of the players I've picked so far are English.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have thought that.
What a surprise.
Okay, I'm looking at my big board. I'm looking at who's still on the board. And I noticed that you took Haaland. Yeah. I need my own big center forward.
Fair enough.
So with the number seven pick in the 2022 Gab and Jules draft, Gab picks.
Dusan
Vlahović. Yeah. How about that?
You know what? I would have had him at my eighth pick if you hadn't picked him in seventh.
Yeah, well, I jumped ahead of you there.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm very happy with that. So this is my turn now. It's the eighth pick in our draft. And nice, interesting, because there's obviously the superstars have been taken pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to.
Now you can pick Wesley Fofana.
You have to be more clever. He's on the list, you know? Mm. So is Sandro Tonali, by the way. But on this one, because every time I watch him, there's magic. Because I think I can make him more consistent. I think I can make him even more efficient. I'll go with Anthony as my eighth pick.
Ooh, Anthony from Ajax.
Yes, because I think the talent is there. I think the personality is there. I think there's something very special in that player. So that's my pick.
All right, and you also have the number nine pick.
And my number nine, which you'll be happy because you can do the song, the famous song that you created for him, of course. I need a centre back. I need a left footer because the left footer centre backs are the future in this game. Is
na 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 Botman. Botman.
Sven Botman.
Botman.
Indeed, Botman is my ninth pick.
All right, and rounding out the top 10, I was very tempted to go with Jonathan David, but then it occurred to me, two Canadians being picked in the top 10.
That's okay.
The world would just be turned upside down and inside out. True. So I'm going to go for my boy, Sandro Tonali.
Yes.
All right, here we go. So Team Jules, if you will, is Erling Braut Haaland, Alfonso Davies, Aurélien Tchouaméni, Anthony, and Sven Botman. Team Gab, far superior in my opinion. Phil Foden, Vinicius Jr., Mason Mount, Dusan Vlahović, and Sandro Tonali. Feel free to get out there and let us know which one of us had the better draft.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, enough draft, Jules. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Actually, not quite enough draft because in tonight's NBA draft, there's a decent chance. I am told that the Italian guy, Paolo Banchero, could be number one, which would mean
number
we would
three.
Have...
Number three, which is really good enough.
We'd have two top NBA draft picks, and hopefully does better than Andrea Bargnani. No disrespect, Andrea.
No disrespect.
But, you know, whereas France, how many number one picks have you had?
We have the next one, next year.
There you go. There you go. All right, the Sadio Mane deal is all done, Jules. Hasan Salihamidzic says the possibility of acquiring him hadn't even crossed his mind until they sat down to discuss an extension with Serge Gnabry's agent, who, of course, Serge Gnabry's agent also happens to be Sadio Mane's agent. They then flew to Merseyside and spent 4 hours at his house to convince him. Does Brazzo's version of events seem plausible to you?
No, at all. I don't believe a second of anything he said in that big interview. I think they thought about it. This is not something that you think about at the end of June and then you do in 2 weeks. It's not possible.
Oh, by the way, Brazzo, I also represent Sadio Mane, and you know his contract.
That Senegalese guy, not bad on the wing. Him, yeah. I'll send you some tapes. Come on. This was a long time coming. And it's great. I'm not saying it's not good. It's good. But you don't need to come up with that kind of stuff. Even if you thought about it before, maybe even if you talk about him before or to him before, it's fine. And Gab, if Oliver Kahn is to be believed, Mane will have company up front because the Bayern sporting director said again that Robert Lewandowski is not going anywhere.
I'll say this for Bayern. They're consistent and I applaud it. Sure. And it's a hard line. And as we've said before, I'm not sure where Lewandowski can go. Yep. Not that many places. Very expensive.
That's true.
And it's also funny that, you know, those numbers thrown around, it went from 15 million to 25 million. Now people are saying, oh, Lewandowski would cost 50 million.
Yeah,
50 million. Come on, man. As reporter Manu Sainz, who is generally very close to Gestifoot, George Mendes' agency, and George Mendes, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo's agent, said says Cristiano is, quote, worried about Manchester United's transfer strategy. Jules, every United fan, I think, is worried. But so it's more relevant that he would put this out. There's no way he writes this without the green light from George Mendes, right?
Yeah, which I find hard to understand the logic behind it. Why would you put that kind of pressure on United now? We said the transfer window is open not that long ago. They're clearly trying to do the Young deal or Lisandro Martinez deal or whatever deal they want to do. Ten Hag is clearly finding his feet at the club. Give them a bit of time. If it was August 15th and they had signed you and me, then I would say, okay.
Should we read this, though, in the context of let's put Ronaldo more in the conversation, let's put the name out there in case somebody else might have a better deal, maybe Ten Hag's like, I don't mind if, you know.
That's maybe more the case than anything else. Former Barcelona director and presidential candidate Toni Freixa is a really party pooper, Gab.
That's right. Everybody's getting all excited about the new deals that, you know, they voted on and now that they're allowed to strike. And by the way, they haven't struck them yet, but they're close, certainly as far as the TV deal is concerned. He goes out and he puts out a tweet. He says, like, you guys do know that Lewandowski, Jules Koundé, Rafinha, Bernardo Silva, none of these guys are coming, right? None of them. He's talking numbers, and the reality is, I don't know why people. I mean, it gets to the point where, you know, Rafinha like hawked everybody 60 million here and there. These are real numbers that Barcelona have to deal with. They're working to try to fix it, but why create this expectation? I don't get it. I in that sense, he's right.
Yeah, definitely.
Paris Saint-Germain big boss Nasser Al-Khelaifi gave an interview to Gazzetta dello Sport. He said three things, and personally, I think only one of these three things is true. 100% true, but only one of them is true.
Let's see.
See if you can guess which one, Jules. Okay. He said, quote, Paris Saint-Germain never spoke to Zidane.
Not true.
True or false? Okay. Number two, Real Madrid offered Mbappe for far more than Paris Saint-Germain did.
Not true.
Number three, a World Cup without Italy is like a cappuccino without the coffee in it.
True.
There you go. One out of three, Nasser. Come on. Gotta love that.
You gotta love that. Eight members of Diego Maradona's medical staff have been charged in Argentina, Gab, for not providing adequate care in his final days. This is a horrible story.
It's a horrible story for, obviously, the way it ended. You know, whenever it comes to doctors providing care from the outside, you go back, you look, you have an inquest. It's always incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is.
I think all the family wants is justice and clarity about what happened. And hopefully they get that. Jules, the inquiry into what happened at the Champions League final also continues. French senators aren't happy and they're asking real questions about the police.
Yes, they are about the police. The commission now, they have like a senator commission, like a bit like you have in England as well. And they... they're starting to really, one, get frustrated, and two, starting to understand how much of a car crash this was. The police, you're right, but also the French Federation. Remember, I've told you a few weeks ago how lightly I thought they were getting away with this, considering they were supposed to organize security and everything. And now people are starting asking real questions and also asking for answers from the French Federation, who I think could be in big trouble. Noël Le Graët, the head of the French FA, I think could be and should be in big trouble. Paulo Dybala is still a free agent, Gab, somehow. It seems that the only offer he has on the table right now is one from Sevilla for 3 million euros net a year, which is less than a third of what he wanted from Juventus, and much less than what Juventus were ready to offer him anyway.
Yeah, so I hate to say I told you so, but once in a while, look, I get things wrong and people point them out and whatever. Yeah, I think Juventus got this right. You know, Dybala's people, Dybala's agent is a friend of his dad's, is a guy who runs a car dealership in Argentina, right? He doesn't necessarily have the expertise, the gauging, doesn't have the BS detector that others normally have. And maybe he really thought there was a whole bunch of teams that would offer him, you know, 10 million euros net a season, which, you know, is roughly 300,000 pounds a week, if that's how you count things. And now Juve says, no, you're not worth this 8 million plus 2 million net that, you know, you thought you had. You're going to have to take less money. And he says, okay, fine, well, I'll go get the money from Inter. Inter, I think that door is closing now, because if they get Lukaku, they got Mkhitaryan as well. They still have Correa and Dzeko and obviously Lautaro. That door is closed.
Yeah.
And now Sevilla and Monchi tries to pull a Monchi, popping up and saying, like,
so
hey.
So clever. Hey, look, I'll give you £5. Come over.
I feel bad for him.
I don't. Why do you feel bad for him?
Okay, I feel a little bad for him because he's a talented player who deserves a big stage.
It's his fault.
But yeah, he's not being very clever about this. Sebastian Haller's deal with Borussia Dortmund is done, Jules. It's a 4-year deal for 35 million euros, taking him up to the age of 32.
Yeah.
Does this move the needle?
Well, we'll see. If he's the one from Ajax, if he's the one from West Ham, no. If he's the one from Frankfurt, yes.
Okay, let me put this in a different way, right? You take away Erling Haaland and...
Yeah, but no
hang
one...
On. You take away Erling Haaland and Marco Rosa. You add Edin Terzic, Adeyemi, and Haller.
And Rom and Schlotterbeck.
Meh. Are they going to be better? Can they challenge Bayern?
They've been very good in their recruitment so far. If you add David Rom to play on the left-hand side, he's going to be good. Then I would want to see. But every year, it's the same guy for the last 10 years. Yes, this year they can do. And then we get to the Clásico and then they're smashed by Bayern. So we'll see. But I hope for Ale it works out. The Premier League will lose 4 experienced referees, Gab, this summer. In addition to Mike Dean, Martin Atkinson and John Moss, Kevin Friend is also retiring. Are you concerned?
So first of all, I'm not concerned. I think this is a good thing. I only think one of those 4 people was a good referee in his prime. None of them were in their prime. Premier League, they need new blood. They need to find new people. And I think this gives you opportunities to grow.
Completely.
I don't think these guys, frankly, are going to be missed. It's not just Gabriel Jesus. Arsenal continue to be linked with Rafinha, who I think everybody's got a big for sale tattoo on his head. Jules, more wingers for Arsenal. Great.
Yeah, you don't like too many number 10s. You don't like too many wingers. I think Rafinha will still be a great addition to the squad.
Yeah, sure.
Like Gabriel Jesus as well. The negotiation continues. Let's see if it goes through. I think Gabriel Jesus will be done very soon. Napoli president Aurelio De Laurentiis has been investigated for false accounting over the signing of Victor Osimhen from Lille.
Okay, Jules, I get asked this story, so I'm going to try to break this down.
Yeah, this is not new, by the way.
Yeah, this is not new. This is... Okay, so Victor Osimhen was at Lille. And what happened was, at the time, Lille was run by Gerard Lopez, who has since left the club in very acrimonious circumstances. Yep. Obviously now Bordeaux, who've been gone away on third division. And the club and Lille are the subject of an investigation into fraud. And it's an investigation that's being pushed by Lille's current owners, Merlin. Because they kind of wanted, looking through the books and seeing what went on. Luis Campos, by the way, a big consultant at Lille as well.
Was there, then left before, you know.
Some of this stuff happened. Yeah. So Osimhen, if you look on paper, you notice that Osimhen left officially, what we all reported. Osimhen moves to Napoli for 70 million euros, plus up to 10 million in bonuses. And you dig a little deeper, and you find out that 19.8 million wasn't cash, but it was four players being sold concurrently to Lille. Of these four players, from Napoli, yeah. So these four players, one is Orestes Karnezis, longtime reserve goalkeeper, who's in his mid-30s, he's Greek, for 4.8 million. Then you had Palmieri, former Chelsea youth team player, 7 million euros, who now plays non-league football. This other guy, Manzi, 4 million euros, who's now in the third division. And so the guy Liguori, 4 million, who's now in non-league football. All of them were Napoli youth team players. All of them were sold to Lille. Palmieri gave an interview, said, oh, I've never even been to Lille. They were immediately loaned back to Napoli, who then sent them on to different places. So somebody might be asking, well, why would Lille do this? And the argument is that from Lille's perspective, they want to do this because they wanted to show how much their assets were worth. I mean, I think this is kind of the thesis of the prosecution. We want to show, oh, look, you know, we sold Pepe for 80 million. We sold Osimhen, similar amount. We can generate this money every year. This is how much our squad is worth.
Yeah.
I think that was important to keep certain credit lines
open. Yeah, this is the business plan. So look at that business plan.
At the same time, from Napoli's perspective, these guys are youth players. So I can pretend that Palmieri's worth 7 million, even though he's frankly worth zero.
7 euros.
Yeah, exactly. So you get them, you send them back, then the contracts expire and they move on. And it seems weird that inflating a transfer value like this would make sense. But in the end, accounting wise, if you're Napoli, because you book the because you spread the amortization over the life of the contract, and because you book the cost when you sell a player straight away, you know, this deal on paper cost Napoli very little, which makes it an even better deal when they then sell him for 100 million or whatever it is this summer. So this is stuff they're looking at. Like I said this before, we need more transparency, more oversight.
Yeah.
There you go. You wanted a long-winded Lille Osimhen explanation.
Here
this is why
it.
Stuff happens. And again, we need more oversight, more transparency. I'll never be tired of saying this. You guys have no idea what kind of shenanigans go on.
Yeah, that's true.
After years of Jean-Michel Aulas, well, I guess it must be getting older now.
Yeah, it is.
There's a new owner at Lyon, John Textor. He seems to be buying chunks of clubs across Europe. He's got a chunk of Crystal Palace.
He's got 40% at Crystal Palace. He's got Botafogo. He's got Molenbeek as well in Belgium. And now he's got 60% at Lyon. He's saying that Aulas will stay as the president, as the chairman.
Is this because Aulas is getting on now?
No, it's the partners that he had in the company, Seydou and another company have sold. They wanted out, so they sold. I don't think Aulas could buy them out. I think it's around 600 million euros. So Textor has arrived, said the right things, as often when you've got a new, you know, I think he's a very intelligent guy. I think he likes football. He's been involved even in the 80s. He had kind of football academies, camps, that kind of stuff. I think in the years been at Crystal Palace, we've seen the improvement and we've seen the changes. So I think the Lyon fans should not be too skeptical, maybe at the beginning, certainly.
I don't know that you give Textor the credit for Crystal Palace when you know Steve Parish runs a club.
I know,
you've got David Blitzer and Harris there. And
yeah, true. But
they're the
still,
main guys, but yeah.
He's still at 40% of the club. So, you know, he's still part of this, you know, the new turn that the Crystal Palace has taken. So it'd be very interesting to see what he does.
Well, what I'm curious to know is obviously women's football's grown and Olympique Lyonnais has been a big part of it. They also have the OL Reign as well in NWSL. Is he going to, and Olas always very committed to the women's game, you know, even making losses, because let's face it, women's game generally makes losses, right?
Yeah.
Is Textor going to, has he given any indication about whether he's going to maintain that commitment?
But so, yeah, I think certainly this is the idea. I think Olas would have made sure that whoever come, there was three American potential buyers. One was Gillette's sons and
George Gillette Jr.'s sons.
Yeah. What's his first name? I can't even remember his first name.
Man, I hope they got on the phone with the Spirit of Shankly guys and says, we don't.
Not them. They could not bring any guarantees anyway on the
deal. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Familiar.
Going back to Gillette and Hicks.
I wasn't surprised. But you would think that this is not a time. I think it's time to make this team better and the club stronger, but not to change everything,
right.
Especially not the women's team, who's been, like she said, so successful. So let's hope that it keeps the same direction at least. Rosario Central have a new manager, and it's Carlos Tevez. Gab, can you see him on the bench, patiently giving instructions, not really arguing with the referee or anyone else?
You know, it feels like only last week when we were celebrating his career and his retirement. Yeah. Now we know why he's retiring. Interesting to go to Rosario because he's not from Rosario.
No.
I mean, not that you can't go there.
Yeah, of course.
There's enough teams in Buenos Aires, I thought.
You think so, but...
Good for him. I mean, you know, a lot of times unconventional people who you could never see
managers, him to do well.
You know, work out. So,
yeah.
Lons have signed former New England Revolution striker Adam Buksa, Polish international, for $10 million. I think there's two elements here which I think are interesting. One is you can tell me how he's going to impact Lons and help them into the Champions League. But he's 25 years old. He moved to MLS when he was 22. An unconventional choice, right? MLS keeps saying, oh, we're signing young stars. No, you signed some dude from Poland nobody'd ever heard of.
Yeah.
He does well. And then Revs sell him for more than twice what they signed for him. Could this potentially a new model for MLS?
Yeah, I think it should be, certainly, especially for younger young players or youngish players, if you want, that will take time to develop in MLS. And again, we go back to this. This is a good league. It's a good league when you want your development like that. And clearly, more and more European clubs in the Big Five leagues are looking at what happens in MLS. Certainly for Lens, which is a club that I know really well, they were very impressed with his numbers. They've been following him for a long time. And he ticked a lot of the boxes of what they wanted to replace Calumendo and the strikers that they have right now. And I really hope that he does well in France. I think he's got everything to do well in Ligue 1. And then again, that could be the next sort of the next step to maybe go then to an even better club, an even bigger league. So I really like this deal, I have to say.
Ligue 1, your new home for Polish strikers.
Yeah.
You got Arek Milik, Buksa, and soon Lewandowski, Paris Saint-Germain.
Of course. According to reports in England, Alan Saint-Maximin and Gab could be sold because Newcastle are reluctant to bring their wage structure to keep him. Gab, I thought they had all the money in the world, so they could be able to do this.
I find this story very interesting. So from the outside, what it looks to me is, and it's time for Alan Saint-Maximin to get a new contract, and his agents, you know, go and ask for money. Maybe that's too much, and Newcastle put the word out. We still have standards. It's interesting because we've always wondered, right? When they were taken over by this new Saudi ownership, this idea was, look, it's a new Manchester City,
yes.
New PSG. They're going to throw money around. They haven't thrown money around. I mean, they've spent some money, not yet, and I always wondered, PIF, it's slightly different. This is the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. They've been successful. They have real people running it. This is not something that's a vanity project. They invest a lot of money. They invest in a lot of tech. They invest in a lot of stuff. They look for a return. And that's why, and I've said this before, I was always very skeptical when people say, oh, it's just a big Saudi sports washing thing. It's like Live Golf or whatever. In some ways, could be that. In other ways, it didn't feel that way to me because if you're going to do that, and I say this all due respect to Newcastle, you're not going to buy Newcastle. You're going to buy someplace much more high profile when you're in the Champions League straight away, you know, pretty much every year, guaranteed. You don't have the same level of, you know, why did Paris Saint-Germain make sense, right? Because it's freaking Paris.
Yeah.
People are going to come there all the time. You're in the Champions League every year. You know, you've got a big audience.
Yeah.
Newcastle have to compete with the Big Six, with all these other teams. I think they bought Newcastle because he saw the potential, because it's not a lot of money, $300 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do they need to get different partners in? Because they said, all right, we want to spend this much, but not that much.
Yeah.
And if this is an indication that Newcastle are going to be run as a real football club, as a business, hitting targets, having cash available, mm-hmm. but not going out and chucking money around, I think this is good for the Premier League, and I think this is good for Newcastle.
Yeah.
Even with all my reservations, as you know, about sovereign wealth funds buying football clubs, it's not something I think they should be allowed to do.
No.
But if they're going to run it as a real business, you know, I think it's a positive.
And this is Dan Ashworth's first big task on his hands since, you know, being the sporting director at Newcastle. What to do then with Saint-Maximin? Do you give him the contract that you want? Don't you? Do you sell him now? He still has a few more years, so you don't need to sell now, I guess. But yeah, it's going to be, you know, big debut for him.
Ryan Giggs has finally resigned as manager of Wales, which means your man will no longer be interim manager, whatever he was.
Rob Page, yeah.
Yeah, Rob Page. Why did it take this long for him to resign?
I've got no idea, Gab. I think, well, we've said it before.
Should we say the background to this?
He's
been charged
yeah.
with assault. He's waiting for a court date. Yeah. Obviously, while he's been charged, he's not, you know, he's not on bail, but he's not, he can't manage Wales.
There was a presumption of innocence, of course. Maybe that's why it took so long. I'm not really sure. I mean, this date for the trial is taking forever, it seems, as well. So that, I don't think that helped. But this is normal. This makes a lot of sense. It should have been done, I think, a long time ago. And whether Rob Page was doing a good job, which he is, or not, it didn't even matter. Ryan Giggs could not take over, could not come back to being the manager.
I'm assuming he was suspended without. He was.
He was suspended
anyway.
Yeah,
and they weren't paying him any money, right?
Well, I hope not. I don't think so. So maybe they finally said to him, listen, now you have to resign. Maybe they've been telling him you have to resign and he didn't want to do it, and he was still, I guess, free to do it or not. Now that he's done, it's finally, and then you can move on and focus on Rob Page and the great work that he's doing in the World Cup for this golden generation. So I think this is a good thing in the end. PSG are paying some €20 million World Club in compensation to get rid of Mauricio Pochettino and his staff, and they also have to pay compensation to Nice for Christophe Galtier, which they found an agreement now.
How much is it?
Around €10 million, probably a little bit less, maybe. What is this thing you put there? FFP? That, I don't know. Why should I be worried about? I don't even know what FFP is.
PSG got in trouble with FFP three times already. I just want to put this in context. Remember Julian Nagelsmann moving and Bayern spending that huge amount?
25, yeah.
People said 25, then Bayern said 9 is less, blah, blah, blah. That's freaking Nagelsmann, okay? Yeah. That's Julian J. Nagelsmann, yes. Right? And now it's €30 million effectively spent on Christophe Galtier. Not quite the same. I don't get it. I don't. All right, financial fair play. You know, at some point, UEFA are going to have to decide we're either enforcing the rules or we're not enforcing the rules. I'll tell you what. You want to make the Super League go away? Enforce cost controls. Figure out a way to do it. Get the best lawyers. Get the politicians to rewrite legislation so that you can't go to courts and have little Muppet scumbags come out and say, no, well, based on this, the statute of limitations, using the law for something that's not meant, that it's not meant for, fine. Otherwise, give up and accept the Super League. Because
We should do gardening leave in France as well for managers, like you do in Italy. You can have 5 managers instead of like paying them off all the time. You just keep them until they have another job, and you know, and at least you don't have to.
I don't understand why they didn't do that. Like, why not just keep paying Pochettino?
No, I don't. Think,
and then saying,
I'm
"Hey, Poch,
sure you're allowed in France." I don't know. I really, the answer is I don't know if you can do it. If they don't want to do it, it's certainly not in our culture. As in, like, you know, I don't think it's been done before.
Well,
maybe
because if you keep paying Pochettino. And then, you know, in 6 months, Manchester United sack Ten Hag, let's say. Hypothetically. Yeah. Sorry, Eric. I'm not saying you're in the sack. And then they move for Pochettino. Then they're still under contract with Paris Saint-Germain. And so at least you let him go and you're not paying him €20 million.
Yeah.
And maybe you could even ask Manchester United for some money.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, whatever.
I don't know.
Speaking of Galtier, Lucien Favre seems to be the man tipped to replace him at Nice. Good choice, Jules.
He is, but remember he had two really good seasons. Well, 2 years before, 16-18.
He had one good season and one.
One really good. That team with Balotelli, with Belanda, with Ben Arfa was
could
amazing.
A team with Super Mario not be good?
And he was playing so well and scoring so many goals. It was fascinating to watch. They were winter champions. They didn't win the title, but they were so good to watch. Second season was more difficult, as often with our friend Lucien. But yeah, I'm all for it. I think he knows the club well. He gets on very well with the president and with the sporting director, Julien Fournier. So that makes sense. You know, I'm never keen on going back and have second stint or third and that kind of stuff. So we'll
unless
have to see.
Unless it's Ancelotti, right?
Honestly,
he's allowed to.
Of course, he's allowed. Samuel Eto'o has been sentenced to 22 months in prison in Spain for tax evasion, Gab. But he won't serve any time, right?
No, he's not. Because in Spain, if you're convicted of a non-violent offense and you're a first-time offender and your sentence is less than 2 years, you don't actually go to prison. That said, he's got to pay back €4 million in back taxes. It's interesting. Spain, they started about 10 years ago. They've had this very aggressive policy to go after famous people, high-profile people, whether it's actors, whether it's athletes, over their back taxes. Because, you know, again, there's lawyers who go out and say, oh, let's exploit this loophole. Let's put this company in Malta with a subsidiary in the Cayman Islands, and we'll put this in your dad's name. And it's all gray area stuff. It's called tax avoidance, which is not illegal. Tax evasion is illegal. And these are gray areas. Cristiano Ronaldo went through it. George Mendes went through it. Lionel Messi went through it. And they sit and they argue in court. And then eventually people say, all right, fine. Let's settle. I'll pay you the 4 million euros, and you give me the suspended sentence, which means I never go to prison, and it's done. It's debatable, but I think, given especially in these times, people hate the idea of really wealthy people not paying taxes, you know, or paying less taxes than they should be due. Sven Botman, we need to wait for the last show. Come on. We got to bring up, well, we had him before in our draft. We're going to bring up Sven Botman. We got to bring up the only living Sorloth in captivity. Come on, man. Na, 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 na. Come on. What's happening here?
I don't know anymore.
Lee,
I don't know.
Newcastle, sure, no?
Yeah, I mean, there are clubs that I don't know why this is still taking so long. Maybe because they're waiting for Milan to make a good offer. They're not completely happy with Newcastle, who've made an offer. I'm not sure. And for Sorloth, well.
All right. Sorloth, we can leave.
Yeah, we can leave it.
I go back to this. You love Botman. Scouts love Botman. Why does it feel like there's only two teams in the world? Like, I wonder about this, right?
Could Manchester, if you were Chelsea, I would go for him.
Right. Could Manchester United use another center
100%.
Half? 100%. Right? Could Erik ten Hag converse with Sven Botman in his native tongue?
Basically,
yes, they're both Dutch.
Center back. I don't understand why Pau Torres is the same. Why is Pau Torres not, has not moved yet?
No, but at least Skriniar and Pau Torres and Jules Koundé get linked with 20 different clubs.
Yeah, true.
This guy's been going on for a year, and it's the same two clubs. It's hilarious, isn't it?
It's funny. Funny. There's another defender that could be moving this summer. It's Marco Cucurella, with reports saying that he's agreed terms with Manchester City.
Yeah, I mean, kind of makes sense. Obviously, in that role, you're going to have, you know, Walker's not getting younger. Zinchenko's possibly moving on.
Yeah, Cancelo.
Benjamin Mendy, if when he moves on, he's not going to move on any place that he can help. So it makes sense. He obviously had a very good season last year. And obviously with his background, you would imagine he could fit in. I think a lot is going to come down to price. And the price is quoted about whether it's a good deal. But obviously, this is going to be a player that...
He's such a Pep player as well.
He's very much a Pep player. And you know what? And he brings the quality with the intensity.
Yes,
and that's,
exactly.
You know, probably more so than Zinchenko.
Yeah, you're right. That's very true.
I got to ask you about this. Enzo Fernandez.
Oh, what an exciting deal this morning, on Thursday morning. That was announced by Benfica from River. Such a talented young Argentine player. I think it's a really good move from Benfica, 10 million plus 8 million of add-ons, you know, with different bonuses and everything. I'm very excited to see him. I think, again, this is a nice pathway to go from River in Argentina to Benfica and the Portuguese league first, and then maybe you see how higher you can go. I think Benfica fans can be very excited, and even, you know, European football fans in general, because it's good to have someone like him in Europe.
What I don't follow about this, and I genuinely don't know, I was going to make some calls about this just to try to get a sense, is it seems that there's a direct pathway from, a lot of times, from Argentina. We saw it before with Di Maria as well, and especially from Brazil to Portugal, usually two clubs in Portugal, usually with the same agents involved all the time.
Yeah.
Why? Like, why couldn't Leipzig go and get him? Why couldn't Manchester United go and get him? Like,
I think maybe the heritage, as you said, I think they know in Argentina.
They don't speak Portuguese in Argentina.
Like, no, they don't. But you know this pathway has worked. It's worked before for so many players that you follow the same. Maybe it's good to, the Portuguese league is a good starting league in Europe when you come from South America as well, which I think is true. You know, for the climate, for the style of football, the language is still not too different between Spanish and Portuguese. Certainly, if you're Brazilian, it makes.
I'm not sure the
sense.
Climate in Lisbon and the climate in Buenos Aires necessarily.
But still, you know, like it's better.
It's better than
arriving in East Germany, like, you know, when you're 20 suddenly. You know, like, do you see what I mean?
Right. So. Maybe more appeal than Leipzig. But it does feel as if this happens time and again. And maybe this can be a good Gavin Jules meets for next season, because I still don't understand. If you look, Portugal is such a weird animal in the sense that they export more players than anybody else in Europe, or close to the top. They have But then they bring in so many gifted foreign players, and then they all sell them on for so much money.
Yeah.
And it's not a big country. It seems counterintuitive. What they do exceptionally well. Yeah, I think we can agree on that.
Yeah, it's clear. It's clear. It's been a long time since we talked about Valencia, Gab, and the new Mestalla. Well, new as in it might be new one day, but at least they're starting again work on the stadium.
Yeah, Peter Lim found some money to go and build something in the club. Like, this has been ongoing for so long. I think this whole project, from the point that, you know, it reminded me, there's an episode of The Simpsons where, like, Mr. Burns, like, realizes that he's going to build some sort of giant, like a giant dome over Springfield so he can block out the sun or whatever. And then the new Mestalla was going to rise so high to block out the sun, they get stuck. Like, if there's a business case to be made, if this is going to help the club generate more revenue, if the fans are there. But I'll tell you what, the fans are going to be there if they appreciate what Peter Lim is doing. If they continue to think that, you know, Peter Lim is simply there because he's stubborn and they all want him gone, not so much. Yeah. It's not going to help. Then at that point, invest in the squad. Like I said, I don't want to be 100% negative. And Peter, you have a standing invitation to come on the Gab and Jules Meets podcast, and you can tell us what the heck you're doing with this football club, what the plan is, because I'll tell you what, I do not understand it. And I think Valencia fans, and I know Valencia fans, a little bit like Roma fans, they can be a massive pain in the backside because, they think we're massive, we're as big as Real Madrid and Manchester United and Juventus. And you're not.
Yeah.
But equally, they deserve better treatment than they've had over the last 6-7 years. So, if this helps, I'm all for it. Gareth Bale was spotted at Cardiff's training ground, Jules. Do you think he was just visiting friends, maybe seeing if he could get some free gear, or is he really headed to the championship?
I don't think it's a done deal yet with Cardiff. I think he's one of the clubs that are keen on having him. And I think he visited the training ground, spoke to Steve Morrison, the manager.
This is the Steve Morrison who misspells his last name, right?
The former player, yeah.
Yeah, with like one S.
Yeah.
And
one R, two S's or something.
The
other way around?
You know, I actually misspell it, Steve, if you're watching. Just an unconventional spelling.
Yeah, or different maybe than other Morrisons, I don't know. But I still think...
from the supermarket.
Yeah, I still think this makes a lot of sense. He might not end up there. I would love him to go there, of course, considering, my wife's family's attachment to Cardiff City Football Club. So... it would be great, but he might have other options. I don't know what he has, really. I don't know what he wants.
I will not make any golf jokes.
Okay. Kevin Prince-Boateng has signed a new one-year deal at Hertha Berlin. Gab, you must be excited.
I am. It's so sweet. He goes to Monza in the second division, and last year he came on. He started some games. He's 35 years old. Listen, Kevin Prince-Boateng is the second best rapping footballer in history.
I thought he was going to say the second best Boateng out there.
Well, I refer you back to what Sami Khedira told us when he sat down with us for Gab and Jules Meets, that Kevin Prince-Boateng was by far the best player he'd ever seen with when he was 15 years old. So something like, it's nice to have him around. There's something about guys who are so talented and the career kind of goes this way and that. And then at the end, you know, they can tell the clock is ticking sand through the hourglass and they want to make it count. So good luck to him. Hertha, of course, a bit of a zoo of a club, but you know, that makes it all the more colorful.
So, he's still in the Bundesliga.
Jules, this brings us to an end. I think we need to take a bit of a break now because it's a summer. We're both going to go on holiday. We're going to be back at the beginning of August. In the meantime, to keep you entertained, we have a whole selection of Gab and Jules Meets. We've spoken to Zlatan Ibrahimovic, to Victor Montagliani, to Sami Khedira, long-form podcast. Go and check them out. They're not time-sensitive. We have another one coming out, by the way, with Greg Berhalter, 3G U.S. men's national team coach, going to have the youngest team at the World Cup in 2022. That should drop very, very shortly. Do check that out. See you in early August, Jules.
Yes.
Until then, everybody, love the game. Love yourself. No, I said it wrong. It's the last show. This is August. Here we go. Love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.